Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, we are joined by my friend, Allie. And Allie and I connected back in 2014, and she has always just been such an amazing supporter of not only my work, but me as a person. And she's a huge fan of the podcast, which makes me blush because I'm a huge fan of her. So we talked about having her on the show to talk about how she exists in a thin body, I exist in a fat body, and yet we can support one another and how to be a good ally to your fat friend. So hi, Allie.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Thank you for being here. I think that this is a conversation that we're seeing popping up a little bit here and there in social media, but it also feels like one that people don't know how to broach. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to, I think when I came to you and I said, hey, one topic would be like, how do you tell someone who is living in a bigger body about the resources that you offer? Because I've always wanted to say to someone when I find out they're pregnant and they are in a larger body, oh my gosh, I know this woman and she's so incredible and she has all of this information and you should look into her. But what I don't want them to hear when I say that is, hey, you're fat. And here's a fat resource, because that's not at all how I feel about it. I get so much from the information that you provide as a mother and a woman and someone living in, you know, a very thin oriented society. So, you know, it's that I want to be able to tell people about you from a standpoint that I'm trying to support them, not judge them.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I've had those own feelings myself. Like, I've been in Target and I see a plus size woman who to me looks pregnant. And I want to be like, ooh, let me give you my card. I have this like incredible resource and all these resources for you. And I don't do that. I've actually never done that because I don't know, you should never assume someone's pregnant. I don't care if they're like walking onto the L&D floor, huffing and puffing, like don't ever assume someone's pregnant.
Right.
And two, I don't know if that person self-identifies as plus size. So it's not my, I just don't feel comfortable doing it because for most of my younger life, I was trying to wear all the black clothing possible to disguise the fact that I was fat. And I didn't want anyone else to know, even though everyone knew, you know, it's just this weird thing. And sometimes it comes up if I'm having a conversation with a stranger, more so like at an airport or somewhere where you like have a few more than like 20 seconds to talk. Oh, what do you do? Oh, wow, that's awesome. I'd love to know more about it. And that's organic. But I have had people like you ask me, how can I share your resources? And I've always said that a safe space to do that is online, on the internet. And in fact, I feel so, I don't know, tickled. I feel excited when my thin friends share my work because I know that, you know, so many of my plus size friends identify with it. But to see friends that exist in a smaller body share the work that I'm doing, it means not only that it makes an impact in their lives on some level and they get it, but that they want to help other people and to put those resources out into the world. And it just means the world to me. So I think that that's a safe way to share resources that may or may not in some ways be triggering to people.
Right. Because you don't want to make anyone, I mean, motherhood, pregnancy, parenting, they come with so much baggage on their own. The last thing you need is, you know, someone making you feel like you've got one more, you know, broken suitcase you've got to drag behind you.
Totally. It's like when I teach doulas, right? When I give talks to doulas around supporting plus size birth, I tell them, okay, now we do this whole like 2-hour training sometime or a lecture. And I say, okay, now that you have all this information on how to support your plus size clients, when you're sitting down to an orientation, like a first time meet and greet with a prospective client, you don't say, oh, you're plus size and I know how to support you now. That would be so awkward, right?
But yeah. And it would be really insulting too. Just like if you said, yes, I just took this class on racism and now I know how to not be racist during our visit.
Yeah. That's an intense example in that it's just about no, but if someone brings it up, if someone says, well, you know, because I'm plus size, I think I'm high risk, then you can say, no, well, actually, you know, and yeah, here's how I can support you through that. And, you know, do you feel like your care provider's size friendly? And that's what this looks like. And so if the door is open to you, you can walk through it, but you don't like slam the door open in someone's face and be like, hi, fat friend, I'm here for you.
Right. And I think too, like I've recommended your book, especially your first book about A Mom's Guide to Body Love, multiple friends, just because I think what you talk about on the podcast and on your Facebook page and the website relates to, I think, all women. And it might be more specific to women living in a larger body, but we know that the healthcare industry in general is not kind to women. They don't listen to women, and that society makes pretty much all women. I don't know. I've never met a woman who does not have some shame about her body.
I don't think I have either.
Yeah, that's a unicorn I would love to find.
Yeah.
I just don't know if she exists yet.
No. And maybe she does like 95% of the time, but there's always going to be that 5% where you struggle. And it's right. You can't avoid it in our society.
No, and self-love is like a journey for your whole life, I think. Hopefully, you're ever evolving as a person. So you're going to have new things you're going to have to learn to love about yourself.
Yes, yeah, it is. It's never ending. And I don't think it should be, because we all, especially as parents too, like our kids' bodies are evolving. Our bodies never stop changing, right? Like,
no.
You know, I'm turning 40 in like a couple of months, and my boobs used to be way higher than they are now. Like, and I need to learn to love that and accept that and work really damn hard to find cute bras that make me feel sexy instead of just beige. So it's forever.
Right. It's never ending. I think no matter where you're at in your life, you're going to feel some level of disappointment in yourself. It's just, and that's not a bad thing. I don't think we're all going to have it. It's what you say to yourself after you have that thought of disappointment, you know? Because I think sometimes I'll joke and say, like, oh, the saying, the youth is wasted on the young, is so true. Like, gosh, if I had the knowledge and confidence that I have now in my 30s, when I had the body of a 20-year-old, I would have had a lot more fun. Yeah. But, you know, you can't go back. So.
No, you can't. And even though, yeah, I look at some pictures too, and I'm like, damn, Jen, what? Why were you so hung up? But there's a freedom that comes in your 30s. And I can't wait to find out how much more freeing it is in your 40s, that you just don't care as much what people think.
Yeah.
You don't have to surround yourself by people that you grew up with that kind of made you feel shitty about your body. Like, you can just really be picky with the people you put into your life and how you feel about yourself. It is liberating.
I could not agree more. I think that I love being in my 30s, and I do look forward to my 40s, because I feel like I'm just really kind of coming into my own. And I love not giving a shit what people think anymore. And I care what my family thinks, but, you know, I can't spend what short time I have on this earth anymore, being worried about making other people feel comfortable with how I act or what I am wearing. Or, you know, I find myself, I love being dressed up and I love having a lot of makeup on and my hair done. And Dolly Parton is like one of my heroines. So if that gives you a visual. And I often feel like it's too much, you know, I'll downplay it to go pick up my kid at school or for PTA meetings. And because I, you know, I'll see a mom kind of looking at me like, gosh, why is she? But then I realize, like, no, this is who I am. I love being dressed up. And it's okay. Just that as much as it's okay for those moms who don't want to be dressed up and love being in comfortable yoga pants at a PTA meeting.
I love that because I found the freedom of picking my kid up from school, which you probably see on Instagram a lot with like no makeup. Like they're lucky I put a bra on. And it's just freeing. Like I don't feel like I have to wear makeup anymore. But I'll tell you, when I see a mom dolled up like you, I'm like, damn, she looks good. Like I celebrate that. And I always think you look incredibly adorable. But if, you know, if I didn't know you, I just think we need to spend more time celebrating one another and not making us feel ashamed, because it just makes us feel worse about ourselves in the long run, too.
Right. And we're, you know, I always tell women, like, we have to stick together because the patriarchy is doing a lot to keep us down. And
yeah. Yeah.
We don't need to, you know, add fuel to their fire, and we don't need to help them out. I mean, they've have 5,000 years ahead of us, so got a lot of ground to make up in loving and supporting one another, which is why I've always loved the work that you do, because I think, you know, I've said to you more than once, like, oh my gosh, this podcast almost brought me to tears. And it's because they're, when you're talking to these women, it's this level of empathy for other people. And sometimes I get really upset with a lack of empathy on the part of the medical community or, you know, mom chat groups, where they can just be so cruel and forget that there's a human on the other side of what they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I forget, right? Because I've spent so much time really filtering out my social media channels, and I've really left a lot of Facebook groups. I think the only Facebook groups I tap into continuously are around like blogging. Like, I left the mommy groups. Like, I'm still a part of them, but you can do that great, like, don't receive the notifications anymore. Yeah. Because when I go in them for like 4.5 minutes, I'm like, oh, this is awesome community. And here, I want to chime in and help people. And then it just so quickly diverges into this debate. And then there's fat phobia. And it's just like sticky and icky. And I think that's why I love podcasting and blogging in so many ways, because I can still put this great stuff out and help people and support people and encourage them to advocate for themselves and feel great about themselves, but like not also have the sticky and the icky connected to it. And how great would it be if we could just have those safer spaces where we could engage? And I know there are some great Facebook groups, but I had one for many years when it was small, and then it got massive and I just had to shut it down. I was just like, if I can't handle this, how can anyone else? And why does it always have to go there? I don't know.
Like, why? I always wonder, you know, these women who get on and start attacking another parent for her parenting decisions. Like, have you never made a mistake or a decision someone didn't agree with? Because we know as parents, part of it is survival and making a decision that's best for you in that moment. And it's no one's business.
Yeah.
It is none of your business. And sometimes I wish I could reach through the computer and like grab these like mean trolls' hands and just say like, I'm so sorry. Like, obviously you're really hurting to treat people this way. Like, let's talk about what's hurting you, because someone who loves themselves and is confident and is not in a lot of pain does not treat people that way.
Yeah, no, you're kind. When I see men especially doing it, I'm like, I want to talk to your mother. Yeah. Like, what happened? Oh, did your mother know you're doing this? Because I would be so ashamed of my son if he ever made some of the comments I see, especially the just, fat, phobic, gross stuff in comment sections that are just horrifying beyond women attacking one another. My philosophy is the best way to parent is with love. And if you're making decisions with love, then you are making all the right choices.
Yes. I mean, that we know from research that that's what children need above anything, is to know that they have, you know, a group of people that love them.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, it sounds so like, you know, but like cheesy Jen here, but like, kumbaya, let's just love one another. Like, sorry, I was a camp counselor forever. Like, there's this bubble that I've experienced in my life with camp and with friends where it can be this really healthy, uplifting, like, experience. Is it always like that? Nope. But overall, and I think that goes back to like, really being mindful of the people that you invite into your life and setting healthy boundaries with family members who make you feel kind of crappy about yourself.
Right.
And I think that's a perfect segue into us really looking at some of the ways that our thin friends can be good allies for us. And I think it's exciting to, I'm excited to have this conversation because I feel like I've done some educating with my friends. And then one thing that I will always struggle with, and so I can just start here, anytime I'm having a dinner date or cocktails, happy hour date with friends while I'm driving to wherever we've picked out, I'm anxious. I'm anxious that they're going to arrive first and they're going to pick a seating option that does not work for me. And I realize that I exist in a much larger body, but I'm also really, really short. So like bar high tops have really never worked for me. My little feet fall asleep. It's awful. Like even when I was small, it doesn't work. And so that is something to me, we're still to this day, and I've gotten better about sending a private message like, hey, I'm on my way. Can you pick a table of chairs? But I just wish I didn't have to do that sometimes.
Yeah, I think for me, that is something that I would hope I would be aware of, but it could easily be something that I'm not aware of. But again, it is too bad that you have to even say that, because if you were coming with a baby and a baby carrier, we can presume that your friends would pick a table that's low, that had chairs, they'd ask the hostess for a carrier stand.
Yeah.
So do you think that it's easier for them to not acknowledge that because of society's feelings towards people living in a larger body, or do they not want to bring it up because they don't want to make you feel uncomfortable?
I think sometimes it's just not even a thought. Like yeah. People go to a restaurant, maybe they're running 2 minutes early or 2 minutes late, and they're just like, oh, a table for two. And it's not the thought of, oh, can my friend of a different size or even a different ability sit where I am comfortably? And I think that kind of tiptoes on thin privilege when you exist in a small body. There are so many things that you are privileged to that you don't realize unless you're friends with someone who exists with a larger body, or you have a family member that does. And so I would say that that is a prime example of thin privilege. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, people are like, white privilege, thin privilege. Oh my goodness. No. I'm a white woman. I'm also a woman and I'm fat and I don't have a lot of money. Like there's a lot of disadvantages I have, but I'm a white woman. So I have a lot of privilege that other people don't have. And I'm aware of that. And being aware of that is what's important, and having conversations about it and knowing about it is the first step.
Right. And just because you are thin and have thin privilege, that comes with its own areas. But you should be aware of the fact that you are privileged. I mean, I even think of dressing rooms in stores, or, you know, there's so much of it. I can't remember her name, which is terrible, but there's a great TED talk about this Irish activist who is a little person. And I watched it and she talked about just how the world was set up for people who are taller, even things like the locks in bathroom stalls.
Yeah.
And it's something that you wouldn't even think of. But then once you're aware of it, you start to look around and you're like, oh my gosh, like this is the whole world is set up for, you know, people of average height.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great example. I'll put that TED Talk in the show notes. I haven't seen it. I need to see it myself.
Yeah, I will find it for you because it's really great how she points out, you know, even her wanting to buy shoes or clothing that she talks about are representative of who she is as this confident, intelligent woman, but she can't even find clothing or shoes that aren't like a child would wear.
Yeah.
And so I think I had never thought about that before watching that TED Talk. And then after that, I see it all the time now when I'm out.
Yeah.
Like even changing tables in restrooms. Like that's so tall. Like what?
Yeah. No, once you're aware of it, it's like my mother-in-law. I love this. She exists in more of an average body and she's had some of her own weight struggles, but her son and her daughter-in-law are much larger. And she didn't think about, you know, chairs without arms and boosts. And then now her daughter-in-law is like this big advocate. And sometimes she like edits my work for me and helps out. And she's like, I am learning so much and it's awesome. And here's the takeaway on restaurants is when she goes, cause she's always early, you know, she just asks for a table. And there's no conversation. There's no embarrassment. I know whenever I show up somewhere where my mother-in-law has picked, I can just sit down and enjoy my time. And I have no anxiety driving there because she's already picking a table with chairs. And
so that has to make you feel really good.
It does. Oh my gosh, it so does. It eliminates so much anxiety. And hey, when you're going out to dinner, all you want to do is have fun with your friend or family, right?
Like
we're spending a lot of money for food. You know, it's like you want it to be an enjoyable experience. So those are just one little barrier. So I'd say if, you know, when you're going out with larger friends, allow them to pick the seating option or just say a table with chairs. Like, unless they're those awkward, weird chairs that go narrow towards the back that are somehow super popular everywhere. But just something to be mindful of because it has been harder being in a much larger body and navigating those experiences and going to meetups and not knowing what to expect or even going to people's homes. Like backyard patio furniture, most of it not size friendly, but a lot of people have a folding chair that they can just have out if someone needs it, right? It's not right. That difficult.
No, I think those are great, great things for people to think about.
Yeah, that's one that always just like every time I'm like, oh, am I going to be embarrassed? Am I not? And, you know, I'd like to say I'm at that place where I'm just like, this doesn't work for me. Let's sit somewhere else. But I still sometimes find myself apologizing like, oh, I'm really sorry. This doesn't work. Let's ask the hostess to move us. And so, yeah. How about the language that people use, especially those in smaller bodies, about their own body? And we started this off, Allie and I, talking about, you know, people of all sizes struggle. But as someone who was, you know, chubby in high school and fat as an adult, hearing my thin friends say, I'm fat, or I can't eat this because I don't want to get fat. Sometimes I just want to wave my arms in the air and be like, so you don't want to become me and you don't like me. And why am I standing here? So why don't you kind of take the lead from your own perspective on that?
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, I'm sure I think it's so hard because I'm guessing that some of those people have no intention of making you feel bad, but we are not cognizant in this world about how we talk about our bodies, even how we talk about them in front of children. I mean, I look back at how my mom and aunt spoke about their bodies And these are two, you know, really forward-thinking feminists, and they did not talk kindly about their bodies.
And how did that make you feel growing up in a smaller body?
Well, you know, when I listened to your episode about child dieting, that episode was hard for me to listen to only because I just, like, my heart was breaking for these children. But I look back thinking I was always really aware of my weight, you know, middle school, high school, always wanting to be really thin. And I think, like earlier when I said, you know, if I had my body of when I was 20 now, how great, you know, like I look back at pictures of myself when I wasn't feeling great about my body. And now I'm like, please, come on. Like, but yeah, how I think so much of that came from hearing my mom and aunt talk about their own bodies.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is also we as women are taught that like self-deprecation is a form of being humble and modest.
Mm.
And, you know, like if someone compliments another woman, I see this all the time, like, oh my gosh, you look so beautiful today. They'll like come back with a reason why they're not that beautiful today.
Yep.
Oh, like, no, I haven't washed my hair. I didn't. Instead of just saying like, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, but I think like to your point of how you talk about these things in front of your friends, you should be aware. Just like if you had a friend who was really ill with cancer, you would want to be aware of how you talked about health and life in front of them.
Totally. Yeah.
Not that you're ill.
A little bit, or a friend that's a woman of color.
Like, right.
And, I mean, we should all be working on what we're saying and educating ourselves better in general. But, you know, I think the more that we learn from other people's perspectives, the more it helps us to be mindful of our own prejudices and work through them.
Yes. I just am curious, Jen, when you hear your friends of any size make a comment like, oh, I'm getting so fat, or I can't eat that because I don't want to gain weight. As someone who's so educated and such, you know, an advocate for body love, like what's your initial reaction to that?
It depends on how much energy I have to like utilize that day.
Yeah.
So if I'm just completely spent, sometimes I'll just exit myself from the conversation because mm-hmm. I can't even go there.
Yeah.
But sometimes, I would say most of the time when I hear those things, I'm like, what are you talking about? Your body is amazing. I think that's like my go-to is like, you know, and maybe I should do a better job of being like, I understand you feel that, or using that language, but I don't know sometimes how to do that. Like, maybe I should validate how they're feeling, but...
Well, I mean, you're also not... Your role is to be everyone's therapist.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a burden you have to take on.
But it's usually just like, what are you talking about? I don't go in for the cutthroat of, are you saying that you don't want to ever look like me? And, you know, but sometimes, yeah, that's where my head goes is why am I even here? Why am I standing here? Do they not realize that I'm standing here? But often, 90% of the time, I'd say it's what are you talking about? Like, your body is incredible, and like boosting them up because that's just who I am naturally,
right?
And what I go to. But yeah, sometimes I'll be driving home from those thing events or when I hear those things, and yeah, it does make me feel pretty crappy about myself. And that's a tough place to be because we each exist in our own bodies and have the right to feel however we want to feel about our body. But some of the things that we say, I don't think we realize how much of an impact they make in other people's lives, whether or not we intend to say those things the way they come across.
Right. I can say from experience that a lot of people probably don't. I mean, my foot is in my mouth more than I care to admit.
Mine too. But it's usually with my husband that I say these things. I'm like, oh, did I just say that out loud? Yeah, it happens. But I think always just working on it. I think being mindful of our own journey to self-acceptance and self-love is so important. And the more that we can tap into that, the less we're going to be standing in a group full of women talking about how much we hate ourselves. And I think that segues perfect to work environments, especially office environments or any work area where there is a common place that usually revolves around food. I've never been in an office that wasn't toxic. I've never been in an office where the conversation didn't always revolve around food and, oh no, I can't have birthday cake that we're celebrating today because I'm on a diet or I'm, you know, boycotting this or I've only ever experienced toxic work environments. How about you?
Yeah. As you were saying that, I was like, well, that's really depressing. Yeah. But so true. You know, I haven't worked in that many offices because I was self-employed and I'm mm-hmm. still an independent contractor now. But I would say even in those environments, yes, I go to networking meetings for women business owners here in Golden, Colorado. And yeah, you do hear it from those women. And it's really sad because that's not what we should be talking about. Like, you're in a room full of these really intelligent women who own their own businesses, who are helping break the glass ceiling, and we're focusing on our physical appearance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of brings you to your knees when you really think about it. But I remember just being so entrenched in it. You know, for my wedding, I put this sign on my office door that said, "Don't feed the bride." Like, I think about that now and I'm like, oh my gosh, like how sad. And I remember like, oh no, I'm trying to lose weight for my wedding dress. So I can't have, you know, Susie's birthday cake today. And then often on the way home, guess what I was stopping to get because I really did want something sweet. And then I got way more sweet stuff than if I would have just had a piece of Susie's cake. And I think that's the story of Jen's weight, you know, but still it's like, so often if we don't just enjoy something that we want to enjoy, then we indulge in other ways that aren't always healthy.
Right.
And I know from so many people who their insurance plans at their work, you know, they can get a discount if they're participating in the weight loss group and like all these things that are so triggering. And it shouldn't be about weight at work.
Do they have a don't be a dick program? Like they should get an award for participating in that.
I love it.
From my husband who works in the corporate field, you know, that's really what they need. Like, who cares about what you physically look like? It should be about how you treat your coworkers and interact with other human beings.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And in saying that, I on no level am perfect at all.
Me neither. I just said I had a don't feed the bride sign in my office. Like, I am by no means perfect, but I can tell you now, like if I were to walk into an office environment now and like have to go back to that cubicle life, even though I know all that I know and I'm such a good advocate, I know that for the first couple months, I wouldn't be going in there, you know, guns blazing, like that advocacy 101. I would have to like kind of assimilate and make friends and then be like, hey, you guys, do you realize like how harmful some of these conversations are? And so I just encourage anyone who's currently in those environments, whether you're fat, whether you're thin, whatever, to help stop these conversations from happening and not to participate in them because they are actually really toxic. And I know some people listening are on a weight loss journey and your body, your choice, but we have studies to show that having these conversations are actually really, really unhealthy. And you don't even know if your friend Susie that just had that birthday celebration who's thin struggles with an eating disorder. And you talking about weight loss impacts her just as much as her talking about it does. I mean, it's just
right.
Can be so toxic.
Well, and I think we never know what someone else is going through. So focusing on something other than your own weight loss or their weight loss.
Yeah. There's so many other things to talk about.
Because skinny Susie down the block could also be addicted to Coke. We don't know.
Yep. Yeah. That's so true. That's so true.
Not that I'm saying I'm taking that from my own neighborhood, but it could definitely be. You never know what's going on.
Yeah. There's so much that you can't see. And I always remember when I worked in that environment, and I especially did nonprofit work, it becomes like your family. And I'll never forget my coworker, Jane, always saying, like, you spend more time with your coworkers than you do your own spouse. So, you know, work to build these relationships because these are the people that you spend time with. And for us, in some ways, it really was a healthy environment. Nonprofits, you do become like this little family, but there's always still so much toxic things that are happening. And the more that we can stand up for ourselves and say, actually, these conversations really aren't helpful. Like, they're not beneficial. What else can we, how can we change this work culture? I think could be really helpful and maybe scary to broach, but I'll put some resources in the show notes because there have got to be some on how to improve work environments. So, well,
yes,
there we
I'm
go.
Sure there's plenty.
Yes. How about we talk about something else that can be a little toxic, but I think as a culture, we still completely celebrate it, before and after pictures.
Ugh.
Tell me your thoughts, Allie.
I hate them for so many reasons. I just think, one, to put it out there, like, you, by posting them, are saying that you weren't good enough before,
mm-hmm.
which is just really, really sad, because self-love and worth don't come from the size of your clothing or the number on the scale. They just yeah. don't. And like the episode you had about the children, I mean, these are children with before and after photos. Like, I cried during that episode because I have an 8-year-old son, and the last thing I ever want him to care about right now is what he looks like or his weight.
Yeah, the Curbo app they were marketing yeah. with before and after kids. And
I really hate, because like yeah. you shouldn't look the same after having a baby as you did before having a baby.
Right.
And there are women who do, and good for them, but that they're frankly an anomaly. Like,
yeah, they're the 1%.
Yes. And
there's nothing wrong with their bodies, and we're not shaming them.
No.
That's not what most people experience.
You know, you should celebrate the fact that you grew a human in your body. And even if you didn't, even if you adopted, that comes with a whole level of physical and emotional stress that takes a toll on your body. Like, all of that should be really celebrated. So these before and after photos, I just think they're really dangerous, because you don't see what's behind them. You don't see, mm-hmm. you know, just because someone's thinner does not mean they're healthier.
Yeah. Yeah, I hated that Curbo from Weight Watchers did the before and after pictures of the children, but it caused such a stir that I think it also created a conversation. Because some people look at before and after pictures and they're like, it's inspiration porn, right? Like, oh, I want to be like my friend Jan, and Jan looks so good now. But like, did you not think that Jan looks so good before? Because
right.
statistically, Jan's probably going to end up looking like how she did before,
right.
you know, in like 2 to 5 years. And so are you going to make Jan feel ashamed of herself that she went back to how she looked before? Like, there's just so much wrong with it. So when Curbo had these photos of children, people were so shocked. And then it was like, but yeah, it's horrifying to see before and after pictures of children, but it's also horrifying to see before and after pictures of adults. And I just hope people are listening with open ears and not be like, whatever, Jen. But like, it's seriously, I'm not saying you can't celebrate changes to your bodies. Like, I absolutely love this one Facebook group that I do like is the Fit Fatties Facebook group, because they're fat people living fit lives and they share all these celebrations of like half marathons and that they're existing in their larger bodies, doing amazing things that people can at any size.
Yeah, I can't run a half marathon.
Yeah.
I would literally die.
Yeah, we're celebrating our bodies. So hell yeah, take that gym selfie. Take a picture of the meal that you and your kids spent an hour and a half making together. I will celebrate the heck out of those photos. But before and after photos, especially as a fat person and maybe your fat friend looking at them, they really make me feel pretty crappy about myself, because basically what you're saying is I don't want to look like you.
Yeah, well, they make me feel bad about myself also, because I always think, oh, should I be like putting in more effort like her?
Mm.
Should I be going to the gym? Like, what should, like, you know, I'll look at them sometimes and think like, gosh, maybe mom bellies don't have to look like mine, that lady, you know? So I think they make people all around feel really bad, because you are saying that one is good and one is bad, and that's not true.
No, they're both good, and they should both be celebrated. And whatever you want to do with your body and however you want to exist in your body, I support you. But the before and after, I'll put resources in the show notes so you can do more research there and understand it. I recently had a friend, an influencer who I really, really respect, who shared a before and after picture. And I really went back and forth in my heart of, I really like her and I don't know how this is going to come across, but like, I'm just, okay, I'm going to do it. And I just said, I just want you to be aware of this. You have a big platform and a lot of people who respect you. And I just hope you'll read this resource. And that's pretty much all I did. And she took the photo down and thanked me. We didn't have to have this big conversation. She didn't defend her choices. She took the information, read it, and realized, wow, this could be harmful. And I think I made some comment about, like, not just as a fat person, but as people who struggle with eating disorders, it can be very harmful to see these photos. And so it's much broader perspective than just people of size. I mean, so yeah, I'll put that resource in there, because I think it's really important, and I hope we can continue to have this conversation around before and after pictures, because they are still so celebrated. Whew. All right. I'm just popping in to say that I've been where you might be today. Plus size, pregnant, and discouraged by all the negative information online about what it is like to have a plus size pregnancy. Over the past 7 years, as a certified childbirth educator, I've supported thousands of plus-size people during pregnancy, and I've poured all the information I've gained into a guide that will support you. Get the My Plus-Size Pregnancy Guide today at plussizebirth.com. Be sure to enter coupon code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off your guide. You can also get the audiobook version that I recorded just for you. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Now, let's get back to the show. Let's talk about, like, how to just be a good thin ally.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are some things that come to mind, Allie?
You know, I think one is really applauding your friends. I don't see my mom friends every day, but when I do, it seems like I always hear them, oh, I need to lose weight. And I think just saying to them like, no, you know, you're great. You look great. As long as you're happy, like that's what's important, not your weight or anything else. I think those things, I try and be an ally with sharing your information as much as I can, because I don't know, you know, who's going to see it maybe when I share it, and maybe they don't need it, but they'll send it to a friend of theirs.
Yeah, I so appreciate that. And it means the world to me. And I'm so thankful that I think thin people sharing any resources or musicians or actors of size and celebrating them, like, hello, like Lizzo and all of her messages.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Like, I know she's having a moment and everyone loves her, but can you even love her enough?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's so smart. Like when she says, like, don't tell me you're proud of me because I'm confident about my body. Like, why wouldn't I be confident about my body? And I love that because that is how people should be. You know, there's no other body like yours in the world, yeah. like anyone. So yeah.
Yeah.
If you get
yeah.
Lizzo on the podcast, I am going to flip out.
Oh my gosh, she'd be like, her and Melissa McCarthy are like the top of my wish list. But I actually interviewed someone who has met Lizzo and spent time with her in real life. And I asked, like, is she, and I'm not sure if that episode has aired yet, but it will soon. It's Jen from the Plus Bus. I was like, is Lizzo the same, like, in real life? And she's like, oh yeah, she showed up at our event with like a t-shirt, no bra, and bicycle shorts, and was just like, hey. And I'm like, I can picture that. Like, I think earlier in the show, we were like, there are very few women who like don't feel bad about your bodies. And I'm not speaking on her behalf. I'm sure she's had bad body days. But I look at Lizzo of like that 5% who are like, this is me, take it or leave it. That's your problem. If you have a problem with my body, not my problem.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And she's so sexy and smart. And like, I don't know. I challenge anyone who can watch her perform and not like immediately feel a sensation of joy. Like yeah. when her music comes on and I'm in the car, like my day is immediately better.
It is. And so by thin people sharing Lizzo and my resources or, you know, just so many incredible fat advocates. But I also think not just sharing the resources, but reading them, like reading Marilyn Wan's Fatso, reading Jess Baker's Things No One Tells Fat Girls that I have an essay in on healthcare advocacy, like Sonia Renee Taylor's book, The Body is Not an Apology, and all of her work is incredibly outstanding. I'm a huge Roxane Gay fan, and some of that reading is really hard, especially her book about her body, and it's called Hunger. But I think it can really open people's eyes who haven't existed in a larger body.
She's
as well.
Like so. An incredible person. She's mm-hmm. so smart. I have like
yeah.
people like her. I have several people I have intellectual crushes on, and she's definitely one of them because like her brain just blows me away.
Yeah, I got to meet her for like 10 seconds in Santa Fe. She was doing a speaking engagement.
I remember when you posted about that.
Yeah, here again, and I think I shared this on the show very early on, was a situation where she was speaking at a really old theater, and those old theater seats are only designed with thin people in mind. And so I called ahead and arranged to have a chair with no arms, and you know, it was like a thing that I had to do, and I did it, and it wasn't the easiest, but I did it. And so then I waited in line for like an hour to have her sign my book, and I just mentioned something like I had to be here and this is what I did. And so instead of just signing and saying thanks and handing me back her book, we like had a like, okay, I'll probably say it was about a 2-minute conversation, which it was like, I was so cool because I so admire her and her work, and especially as a writer myself. And I even tiptoed on what I do around advocating for people of size during pregnancy. And she was like, yeah, that's a big problem. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So yes, big fangirl.
I love how you tiptoe around it, Jen, because if I would have met her and I do what you do, I'd been like, look, this is what I do. And you have a platform and you should be sharing my information.
No, I appreciate that so many other people are way better advocates of my own work than I am. I just, yeah, in that space, I was all about uplifting her. And I just was like, maybe I can share like a 2-second thing about what I do. So yeah, but reading books and listening, like you said, listening to podcast episodes about things that are not in your world. Now, for me, that's usually like, I like the crime junkies. podcast and like My Favorite Murder, which I probably shouldn't be listening to as much as I do. But like, I live in this happy bubble, so I like listening to scary crime stuff.
Oh, I love those too.
It's just a funny example of like, you don't always have to just exist in your bubble. Like, okay, not the best example, but you know what I mean? Like learn about things that don't even touch your world, and especially from people of color and people with different abilities. And it just can so enrich your life, and it's so important, and it makes you a better ally on so many different spectrums.
Well, and I think listening to your podcast, because I listen to it every week religiously, and I learn something every time about my own behavior as far as how I talk about weight and bodies, and I get a perspective on how women living in a larger body are treated in the health. You know, even if it doesn't apply to my own life, I learn something.
Well, thank you. That means so incredibly much. And I think one last thing that I really want us to touch on is not only being mindful of the language you use in front of your plus size friends, not only becoming educated and reading books, listening to podcasts, reading articles when they're shared, and sharing those articles. Those are all so important steps. But I think the third, and somewhat the most powerful and transformative to other people, is to stand up for your fat friend when they're not in the room. When things are being said about people of size by your family member, fat jokes by your partner and their friends, if you work in the healthcare industry and there are things being said while you're at the nursing station, start standing up and saying, hey, you guys, you know, we know that that's not really beneficial. Like, not only is it harmful and hurts people's feelings, but statistically, we're actually harming people, like harming people. And, you know, and that may be awkward, and you'll have to broach that conversation from many different angles, right? And sometimes I think it helps just to put the onus on you, like, hey, you guys, I've been really trying to become better educated about these things. And I don't want to make people feel badly about themselves. So I'm not talking about people of size like that anymore. And I really don't want you to do that in front of me. And here's this book that I read recently, and I encourage you to check it out. Like, just how, Allie, how could you maybe?
But you're a lot nicer than me.
Okay, yeah. How would you,
like,
if you were in
stop being an asshole. That is just exactly how I would word it. Like, you're an asshole and you should stop it.
I love it. So handle it however you
want. Yeah, I mean, I don't handle things well in those situations. Like, I definitely, you talked once, I think, in your episode with you and Chris about your, like, hot Irish temper. And I definitely have that. And I have, like, no edit button or filter on my brain. I've tried really hard to, like, work on it. But in those situations, especially when it comes to my friends, I get really defensive. I have a friend who recently went through rehab, and it's horrible the way the moms talk about her behind her back. And I have made a lot of enemies because I just, like, I can't handle it. So you would be really eloquent about it. And I would just say, like, you are a horrible human being.
Well, we need all different types of voices. And I mean, that temper does come out. I think if, like, that friend was standing there, I'm way more easily to be like, what the F is your problem? Why are you saying this in front, you know? But in confrontational situations, I tend to broach it from a let's all get onto the same page perspective, because I feel like sometimes that helps. But yeah, sometimes you just got to be like, what is wrong with you?
Well,
like,
I think your approach probably opens people up to being willing to listen to new ideas and really think about it, and they probably become less defensive. Where my approach, they're probably like, what is up with this woman? What is her problem? And then they probably don't even realize what the issue was, because now they're just concentrated on the fact that I was a jerk.
But your voice is just as needed. And sometimes, oftentimes, we need to rifle some feathers and cause a stir for people to even realize that there is a problem.
Yeah, you should make people feel uncomfortable. Like, I truly believe that, you know, I'm a huge feminist, and my husband sometimes will look at me like, oh gosh, please don't go there with people. And I am not afraid to make them feel uncomfortable to, because I'm not. I have realized life is too short for me to feel less than, and that my voice doesn't matter, and that, you know, what I have to say isn't important. And people do need to learn.
Yeah. That's powerful. Everything you just said, I echo from so many perspectives of my own life as a woman, a mom, a feminist, a fat person. I mean, we have every right to be heard and to take up space, and we are all deserving of respect. So I think that that's like the baseline of this conversation, right? Is not only just to treat people with kindness, but to take it a step further and just being mindful of the needs of your friends. And this has also crossed over to many different areas, not just people of size, but people of different abilities, people of different heights, you know, all different spectrums of this beautiful world that we live in, where not everyone looks the same, thank goodness, even though society tells us we're supposed to. Meeting your friends where they are at. And I think this even applies for like people who are plus size and struggle with their bodies, but live in a smaller plus size body, being aware of, you know, your larger friends and not displacing some of your own conflicts with your body onto them and making them feel bad. I mean, that's a whole other episode we'll have to have, but there are just so many facets to this conversation, and I'm so glad we had it, Allie. I'm like fired up. I think it was really good.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for having me. I really love what you're doing. And I think it's just so important for women to realize, you know, to love themselves. And like you said, to really like make your friends realize that you love them for who they are and that they should love themselves. Like there's nothing really greater than making someone else feel great about themselves.
Yeah, it makes us feel better about ourselves too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I love it. I love when, you know, my friends feel beautiful or really proud of an accomplishment. You know, I get pride from that.
I think we all do. And I think we can all do better. And thank you, Allie, for being an ally and for being a really true friend. I really, really appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you, Jen. I love you. I love all the work you do. I just think you are an amazing person and the world is a better place with you on it.
Well, there I go. I love you too. I love you all, friends. All right. Until next time. Bye, friends.
Bye.